Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can try calling in at 646-716-4893, or you can email me at bonk@aol.com. Before I introduce my extremely wonderful guest tonight, Wendy from Houston, I will make a few announcements. First, I'd like to remind people that we do have our online support chat. I've just canceled the afternoon one because people were not attending, but we still have our Thursday and Sunday evening chats. And getting support through the chat room is really an excellent vehicle. It really makes a difference when you feel you're out there all by yourself to feel like you're not. So if you're interested in coming to our chat room, please drop me a note at bonk@aol.com. I also have our other wonderful chat room, our children's group, Adult Children of Gay Fathers. That's on Wednesday evenings. That group is led by me and our leader of the group, Jason. And it's a wonderful vehicle for people anywhere from 18 to 100, I guess, who have a gay fathers to get support and to talk about the issues that affect our adult children when they grow up, when they have a gay father. And also, I want to announce our next healing weekend. I know it's a long way off, but it sounds like it's a long way off. It's scheduled for September 20th, and it's going to be in Southern California. And I'm really excited about that because we have some wonderful people who are part of our support network, and they are in Southern California. In fact, Wendy, our guest, met some of them at our recent healing weekend in Houston. Wendy, weren't they wonderful women?
Oh, yes. That'll be wonderful. That will be great.
Oh, no.
It's all about connecting.
Yes, it is. And Jason also from our adult child group will be there. He'll do a little workshop for the parents to see what the children go through. And I also asked Mike, our wonderful private investigator, if he would join us also for a little workshop on how to catch your husbands, because Mike's in Southern California near where we're having the work, you know, the get-together. So it should really be great. I'm really excited about it. And so if you're interested, more and more details will be coming out in the next few weeks. Just write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to get back to you and put you on my list for information. So tonight I would like to reintroduce my wonderful friend, who I'm in awe of all the time. That's you, Wendy.
Oh, please.
And you're one of the most awesome women I have ever met. In all my years, like nearly 30 years of working with straight wives, I love you as a person, and I love you as a woman who really has it all together.
Well, thanks
you
to you, Bonnie.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far, Wendy, but thanks. I'll take any credit anybody can give me, but I think you did it mostly yourself. You are an amazing woman with amazing strength, and it's really such your words have comforted thousands and thousands of women, mainly because
good.
I'm sending them out every day to women who want new information, who are new. They're like the deer in the headlights. Their lives are falling apart, just like you.
Yes, I'm definitely falling apart.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I send them your list, they feel so much more comforted. When they read your words and they hear you on the show, you know, it gives them a much better outlook. So those are just a few of the reasons. You have a heart of gold, and you're just a wonderful person, and I really appreciate so much when you do come on, because you always add such good insight, and you were kind enough to write for our series on Straight Wives, Shattered Lives in our second book, and your story just blew so many people away. You're a beautiful writer also of regular stories, not just lists. You're welcome. It's all true. So for those listeners, because there's always a lot of new listeners listening, maybe you can tell them a little bit about your story.
Okay. It's been a while, and I may sound very confident and put together now, but I certainly was not back in 2007. my marriage of 23 years had been deteriorating over several years. That my husband was a workaholic and obsessed with ambition and achievement in his work, and so he left his family by the wayside. And so that was really, you know, a lot of it, of the marriage falling apart. But obviously other things were going wrong also from the very beginning, and I really tried to figure out what was wrong, and I searched and looked and just tried to turn everything over to, and ask him, and I just got nothing from him, and he didn't seem to understand why I was not happy in the marriage. And so as time goes on, you know, you just start becoming hopeless. We did raise two wonderful children who are now 27 and 20, almost 24. Some of those years you get caught up in raising kids. But let's see, in 2007, I was checking the computer to checking the memory. Back then we only had one family computer, and checking the history as I had been advised to do with a 16-year-old child. And I found some, just always was coming across sports. That's what my son is obsessed with. And lo and behold, there was gay porn. And I was stunned, absolutely stunned. And I just did not think it was my son. He had a girlfriend at the time, and it just didn't add up. So the next night I kind of made sure that he didn't go on the computer, so I knew absolutely it was my husband, and there it was again. So for me, it was the straw that broke the camel's back. It was, you know, in looking back, it kind of needed to happen because it gave me the final reason why I could not support the marriage anymore. Because my husband, even though everything deteriorated, he was never ugly to me. He never never raised his voice with me. He never put me down, although, you know, his abuse was a form of neglect. There really wasn't anything that I could justify breaking my vows over. So I just was miserable in a puddle most of that marriage. Anyway, he confronted him, totally denied it, said it was my son, said it was, you know, just every excuse there is. And eventually I got him to sort of admit, and I immediately knew that there was no way I was going to stay in the marriage. And I had never heard of such a thing, so of a gay man marrying a straight wife. I was just deer in headlights. I was shocked. And so I went on the internet, typed it in, gay husbands, and there came the Straight Spouse Network and Bonnie's network, your network. And the Straight Spouse kind of talked about staying together, and there was no way. There was no way I was going to do that. So thanks to you, Bonnie, you answered me right away and let me know, yep, this does happen. And I just started learning as much as I could, and once I knew that I wasn't the only one, it helped some. But it sure was difficult. It sure was difficult, and I was just beside myself. And how did I miss this? And how did this happen? And, you know.
And did I cause it? Did I do something wrong that made him gay?
I mean,
right?
How stupid was I to not see this? And so you immediately start going back over the years and, you know, the beginning. And, you know, I just felt absolutely ridiculous that I had, you know, let this happen. And what was I going to do? I was completely ashamed. I was already ashamed in the marriage because I'd hear my friends talk about their husbands being all over them, and mine wasn't. And I certainly couldn't talk about that. So I was already full of shame over that. And then, you know, and then this, which I couldn't tell anybody. So it was awful. It was awful. And, you know, there's a little piece of you that's relieved that, okay, finally I understand sort of what, you know, what, why things have gone the way they are. But the idea of looking forward was just there's no, you know, I was just frozen. And I got into therapy. I had already been in therapy 3 years prior for a major depression episode. So all these years of therapy I was going through, I didn't know the truth. My therapist didn't even mention it or suggest it or anything, and so we were spinning our wheels in therapy, and then this happened. So therapy for me was just to survive. It really was not about healing at that point. I just had to survive and just wrap my head around what was going on in my life. Because my husband was a fine, upstanding pillar of the community, highly respected, and my world just turned upside down. I just could not get over this. And so I just kind of put one foot in front of the other. And about 5 months, and then we decided to do an amicable divorce. This was in the summer. My son was a junior in high school. We were going to wait till the end of the school year. My husband was a teacher. And so in that fall, my therapist had said I need to start planting seeds about divorce. And I could hardly even say the word divorce, you know, when I think about it. But anyway, somehow I did. He didn't want to talk about it. He didn't want to say anything to the kids. I didn't want to tell the kids about the gay part. Because it was just divorce was enough for them. And so I told the kids that we were probably going to get divorced. And then a month after that, he didn't show up. He didn't come home one night. He was always late coming home from his work. And it was justified that why he was not there. But anyway, that's another story. Anyway, 10 o'clock, my son's, 8:30, he called my son and said he was on his way home, and then 10:30 came, and he still wasn't home. And my son's asking where he is. I don't know where he is. I'm kind of hoping he's in a ditch somewhere because it would make it a lot easier. And I just went to bed. And shortly after that, the phone rang from, and it was my husband calling from the county jail, another county. Oh, farther away from us, probably 40 miles away from us.
Yeah.
And so there I'm in a tailspin again. This really threw me. I mean, wow. So we got through that. He said on the phone, I'm sorry. Please call a substitute in for me for tomorrow. I have to go. They're making me stay here all night for me. So the next morning, I got up and went to work. Of course, I couldn't talk about it to anybody but my boss, who knew kind of the situation. But anyway, he didn't even tell me why he was in the jail. He just said he was sorry. But the next day, I found out by calling the jail that he had been arrested for public lewdness in a roadside park. And that the judge wasn't going to come till late that afternoon, and then I had to go up and drive up there and bail him out. I'd tell my son. It was horrible. I think about it now, and it's like that was a totally different person that did that. I still can't believe that was me that had been endured all that. But anyway, long story shorter, it took about a year to get through all the court stuff, and on a technicality, his charges were reduced, and he was able to keep his job. But in the meantime, he started depleting our money for a civil lawyer to keep his job and a criminal lawyer. And so when that was happening, I was advised that I need to go ahead and file so that he couldn't take any more funds. So I had to go behind his back and file, which was another scary thing for me. I didn't do any of the finances for 23 years, so finding all the documents and everything was pretty amazing to get through, especially because he was on house arrest and he was home all the time. So he was put on administrative leave, and which was good for our income. We served, and eventually moved out, year later, and then right after that, the hurricane hit my house, and I had a tree in my garage to deal with, and various leaks and all kinds of things to deal with. So, anyway, I have survived. We're now 7 years past that fateful day when I found that on the computer, and it might seem like a really long time to people that are just finding out, oh my gosh, how am I going to get through the next 7 years? But, you know, sometimes I feel like it happened yesterday, and sometimes it seems like years ago, because I really have let go of all of this pretty much, and I have moved on, which has not been easy at all, but you go through phases, and you just somehow manage to get through it. I think having my kids really was what I held on to, and trying to do the right thing by my kids. It forced me to get out of bed and you know, face what I had to face. So,
let me ask you a few questions, Wendy.
Sure.
You know, because you're always very honest and open, and people turn to you for that. So, when you found out that your husband was gay, was there any way in your mind that you thought maybe you could work this out?
Beginning. Not for me. Because of all the other factors, his work addiction and his narcissism and his, you know, his total basically rejection of our family and me, it had already deteriorated. And although at the
time... So you were just you were happy to get the truth and understand what was going on, right?
Well, yeah, and I really didn't get the truth, but it was enough for me to say, you know, there was a little piece of me way down deep that said, this is not a marriage, and I am not going to live a lie. And that's what I told him right away. I said, I'm not living a lie. And you know, deep down, I knew I deserved better than this. But that was way deep down, you know. I don't know where I got the strength to say that. But it was enough for me to say, I'm done. Now, I was not making very much money. At the time, I was working, and I had no clue how I was going to do it. But there was a basic value down deep inside me that said, this is not the right thing for my kids. This is not a model of a marriage. For my daughter to see me put up with this, that's not right. And it's not right for my son to think that this is what a marriage is, you know, where the wife is totally ignored. And, you know, that was what drew me to really facing it and getting out. And I, you know, this is the last thing I ever thought I would have to do. As I said, I could hardly even say the word divorce. But there was a piece of me that, first of all, said, "I you deserve better than this. You know, I've been totally betrayed. And, you know, this is not, this is, in the long run, this is not good for my kids to stay." So
what I like to tell women,
and
I think you,
hmm?
What I like to tell women, I think you can confirm this. It's not just about, you know, sexuality. I mean, as far as infidelity, when somebody's lying about their sexuality, year in and year out, and blaming you for the lack of intimacy in the relationship, and making you feel unworthy and that you're not doing something right, I think that goes way beyond the whole issue of infidelity. Do you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I thought, if he's been hiding this, what else has he been hiding? You know, it totally blew the whole valves out of the water. There's no way. It was a deal breaker for me. He broke the valves. Totally broke the vows in not being honest with me. And, I went, so what if I hadn't found on the computer? How long were you going to keep doing this, you know?
Exactly, and probably he would have never told you the truth, right?
Yeah, right. And he never, you know, he really hasn't ever told me the truth.
Right, exactly. And even about his, you know, even when he was locked up, what was that supposed to be? A mistake?
Oh, yeah. He was framed. It was a sting operation. Yeah, he tried to wiggle his way out of that. And, you know, his whole, the whole demeanor and the whole behavior just, you know, it was just, this is a fraud, you know? This whole thing, he's just lying to me one after another, and then he tried to throw my son under the bus. It was like, I am not going to live with this man anymore. I don't even know who this man is. It was both shocking to me, but also, it was like, there is no way I am going to continue with this man, or if you want to call him a man, this person. Now, as I said before, I had no plan. I didn't know how this was going to look. I had never navigated the legal system. I had no lawyer in mind. I had knew nothing. But I knew, and from your, you know, from your explaining to me and reading your newsletters and things like that, I really was, my eyes were open to this whole underground world. That I wanted no part of. I wanted no part of, and I did not, you know, I was not going to, I was not going to be in it. Now, it took a while to get out, but I did make the decision, though, to not share that part of it with my kids. I just couldn't lay that much on them. And I had to get
okay. Do you think that was the right decision in retrospect?
For me, it was because I was afraid if I was falling apart too much, my kids would take that on themselves to try to, you know, take care of me. And so I had to kind of get okay with this and get my feet back on the ground and just wrap my head around this. I was in therapy, you know, what has happened to me, you know, going through the grieving process of, you know, this is really over. I just didn't want to lay all that on my kids. Also, uh-huh. My son was in my husband's class at school, so I couldn't put him through that, especially after his arrest. That was enough. So 3 years after I found out, let's see, it was 2 years after the divorce, I didn't tell my kids. At that point, I could be calm about it. I'm fine. You don't need to worry about me. We will be okay. You know, I could reassure them. I wanted to be in a position where I could be the strong one for them. I know.
I'm just curious. Did they question why you were getting a divorce when you were getting one?
For me, not really. Although it was a shock. It still was a shock to them. And they uh-huh. they had no idea that their father was gay. They had no clue. I mean, he still demonstrates none of the stereotypical, you know, attributes that you would associate, or at least when I got married in 85, you know, he did not play anything, nothing that would lead you to believe that. And he still doesn't. To me, so they were totally shocked. But at that point, I was not as embarrassed by it, and I just felt like I deserved to tell my story. You know, when you get divorced, people everybody has an opinion, whether you like it or not. They have a judgment, one way or the other, what happened, and I just. You know, I just felt like the people that were close to me, I didn't tell very many people the real reason.
Did any of them say to you they always suspected it or
no.
had any idea? Nobody?
Oh, no, not at all.
Uh-huh.
He's a very good actor.
A lot of them are.
Very demanding parents who expected him to behave a certain way, to act a certain way, to do it. I mean, he was very controlled as a child growing up. So, you know, some of those things in the beginning, I felt sorry for him because I knew he had had a rough childhood and had not lived in a very compassionate home. And so I took it upon myself that I was going to be, you know, I was going to give that which he never had.
Like most of us.
Yep. And I thrived on his success. I mean, he was very, very well known. He was, you know, very, a lot of achievement, a lot of accolades. And so me and my low self-esteem, poor self-image, et cetera, I just rode on his coattails. And I became very codependent. And
but
now,
did people tell you how lucky you are to have him for a husband?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah. Although they tell me I was an angel to put up with him.
Uh-huh.
He's very demanding of his students, very demanding of his students, but they had such success that parents thought it was great. So, yeah, there were some very, very difficult moments in all of that. So,
now, did he come from a religious family background?
Yes. Yes, that's where we met. Worked in a church. He was a choir director in a church. And I was in the choir. That's how we met. We were wonderful on paper. We agreed with everything, you know, politically, religiously, financially, discipline with kids. All of that was perfect on paper. So, you know, I just had not one doubt, really, that this was the one. Although now looking back, there were things that I did not deal with, and that was because I was too weak to deal with it. I did not have a strong self-concept, and so when I saw little clues, I just pretended that they would go away. And I now see in my healing process, I do have to go back and recognize the errors in my thinking back then. And that's, you know,
mm-hmm.
This is way past, and I'm at the way at the end of recovery now, but I am having to go back. I, you know, I used his success to fill my lack of worthiness. I thought he would change. If I showed him what I needed, then he would reciprocate. And he did not, because he's a narcissist, and he can't. But, you know, plus there were a lot of messages in society that, you know, well, you know, if you're having trouble, then you need to communicate better. Or he can't read your mind. You know, so I was reading everything there was possibly.
Every self-help book there was, right?
Yes. Relationship Rescue, Dr. Phil's book, and, you know, all these things. And you'd hear, well, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, so, you know, you're not supposed to be the same. And I just kept getting these messages that I was supposed to put up with it, or, you know, you're not supposed to keep score, and, you know, all these kind of things. So my frustration was my fault. You know, there must be something wrong with me that I'm not happy because he's a good man, and, you know, you're so lucky. He takes care of you financially, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. We had nice vacations. It was hard to, on the outside, we look like, you know, the great couple. And so when we divorced, it was, you know, I had to really be strong and just realize people were talking behind my back and just, you know, I just had to, you know, get through it. Had to get through it. So,
once you found out the truth, was there any doubt in your mind that it would lead to divorce?
Not for me. There was not. And, you know, my circumstance, you know, there were a lot of things, I don't want to say good, but there were factors that made it easier for me that my children were already grown. I had a daughter in college already, and so I did not have to deal with custody. I can't imagine having to deal with somebody like that and try to work out custody. Now, I will say back when my children were little and I was so unhappy, the idea of leaving him did cross my mind, but I quickly dismissed it because I thought, you know what, he will never live up to his end of the bargain with the kids. He would cancel. I knew he would cancel on him. He was always changing things. And birth bubbles, and, you know, it was always about him. It still is always about him. And so I was not going to put my kids through that, you know. So I did decide to just put up with it when my kids were little. So my heart goes out to those people who have very young children. I can't even imagine the extra layer of burden that puts on you. But I, you know, I do think sometimes children are resilient, and sometimes mm-hmm. maybe younger, so they all walk through this, it might be better. I don't know. None of it's good. It's just what you have to walk through it. You know, my kids may have some relationship issues with their future spouses because we haven't really talked about it much, and they did not right. see a good marriage. So my belief, and I know my belief is, Bonnie, is that, you know, it's better for children to be from a broken marriage than to be in a broken marriage.
Yep, I totally agree with that.
I'm not saying you need to go out tomorrow and do it all at once, but I think in the back of your mind, you've got to have the long-term plan that you deserve better than this. And you don't know what that future looks like, but this is not a marriage. This is not a marriage. Another thing I thought, somebody, you know, Prince Charming's going to come along, and I got to get out of this one so I can get on to the next one. But that was, you know, that did help me get through it, I guess. But I'm perfectly happy now, 6 years post-divorce. I have learned to be okay with myself, and I live in my home by myself, and it's all good. I'm very content. And I'm still working on healing and continuing to work on myself, which needed a lot of work. I'm going back to the days of how I was back in high school, and, you know, what caused me to marry somebody who was emotionally unavailable, because he was from the beginning unavailable emotionally, and why did I do that? And trying to work on myself. And if somebody comes along, that's fine. If they don't, they don't. My goal is to find contentment and happiness and what I want, and you know, follow what I want to do, which is very foreign because my whole life I was taught to take care of everybody else.
And that's true, Wendy. I'd like to emphasize to women that not everybody's looking for another relationship or another man. And that's fine. I mean, you can just be happy
right.
with yourself.
Right.
And a lot of women
right.
are. You know, they don't want to take right. on somebody later in life with all their baggage, bringing
right.
them your baggage, and there's always going to be issues. I mean, sometimes
yeah,
people do
I,
have
you know,
happily
I mean,
ever
yeah,
after, and that's, right?
It's taken
that's
me a while
great for those
to
women
this.
Who do.
Right. You know, when I was in high school, I mean, I did not date in high school, I looked from afar. I wanted them to boys to look at me, but I was scared to death. I didn't know what I would do if they looked at me. I don't know why I was that way, but I was just like, oh my gosh, if somebody asked me, I don't know what I would do. So I found myself a few years ago with the same thing, because people start saying, okay, well, are you dating and all this kind of thing? And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I don't know what I would do. I was scared again, just like when I was teen. And so I've had to go back and really look at, you know, why am I this way? What's going on? And I've had to really turn inward and learn to be okay with myself. And now my goal is to be whole, and to not feel the shame, and to really you know, be a friend of myself, which is a foreign concept for me. And that way, if that's my goal, is to be content and do things that I want to do and have balance in my life, then if somebody comes along, then, you know, it's fine. But if I make a man my goal and then that doesn't happen, you know, you're not doing all the work you need to do, and you're just going to have in my opinion, you're going to have another, you know, messed up marriage again.
Well, I always tell women that you have to love yourself first before you can even think about loving someone else, because otherwise you're going to jump into another predatory situation. It may not be a gay man.
Exactly.
So it'll be some man who's dysfunctional, and he'll see your dysfunction. And these guys are predators, and they know how to find it. They know how to go after you. They see you're weak and you're vulnerable, and they're going to pounce on you, and you'll just have the same thing in a different form,
right?
Right,
I was really afraid. I was really afraid that I was going to make the mistake again. You know, I was just, I really, well, you go through such trust issues. I didn't trust myself. I picked the wrong person. You know, how did I do this? And so when somebody said, you know, you need to love yourself, that just seemed like, what? I didn't understand what that even meant. And I remember you telling me that, Bonnie, or saying it, Joe's, and I'm like, what do you mean? You know, if I love myself, that means I'm selfish. I was taught not to be selfish. I was taught to take care of other people and not to be conceited. And, you know, all of these values that were instilled into me, and then I've had to really unlearn and relearn, and it's been a long journey, 5 years, to figure all that out. And it's hitting this when I read about things, and you know, I read about codependency, I read about narcissism, and my latest thing is reading about self-compassion, which is a whole new. I did a little assessment online, and I came out very low on that. So I'm learning to treat myself the way I would treat somebody else. I'm real good at taking care of other people, but I wasn't doing that for myself.
And that's great, Wendy. You know, we spend so much time trying to fix a broken marriage. We drive ourselves crazy, running in circles, trying to fix something that will never be fixed. We would take that energy and try to fix ourselves instead. And realize the value that we have, and that when we can't fix ourselves, we're never going to be able to. You know, there's love, and there's healthy love and unhealthy love. And what happens is when you don't fix yourself, let's say if you do fall for someone again, you know, it's always possible, but you'll never love him in a healthy way. And, you know, you might love him in an obsessive way, in a way where he can control you, but it will never be a healthy relationship if you don't love yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, very toxic. And, you know, the other thing, before I get to where, you know, where I'm doing all this stuff now, I would say, you know, another year back, I spent several years being, you know, mad at him, always focusing on his crazy, weird behavior. He was calling me, his victimhood, you know, drama, and how he can't afford to retire now because I had, you know, I'm going to get part of his money. And it was just, I was constantly, and then I would tell my friends all his drama. I was focusing on him because it made me feel like, wow, I'm sure glad I got rid of him, you know. But that was not what I should have been doing. And maybe it's a natural thing that you do that. But once I realized that I need to quit, it was easier to focus on him than on myself. And that, you know, that's one thing that I have learned probably in the last 6 months is in this healing part. And, you know, this is way out. This is after the divorce. This is after you're moving on. You have to take a very, very honest look at yourself. And that is very hard to do. And I think a lot of women that stay angry at the men, or they're going and looking at all the stuff that the men are doing, and this is despicable, and how dare they, and of course I went through all of that. But when you stay focused on that, it's really a way to avoid looking at yourself. And I had to realize that, you know what, spending too much of my energy talking about him, and it made me feel good to put him down. And I had to really say, you know what, you need to not be doing this anymore. And I had to really detach from him. And last fall, I really had to kind of detach completely from him. And I did not think that I would ever be able to do that or have to do that. I thought I had to remain friends for the kids, you know. But once I totally cut off and I didn't even hear what's going on in his life, that it was weird to not even hear any of his drama anymore after 23 years, but it kind of made it very quiet in my life and made me really reflect back and find a way to heal myself. And so that has been a learning thing for me.
Not only that, Wendy, but after all these years and me doing counseling and writing all these books and running all these support groups, working with, close to 100,000 women, always tell women, do as I say, not as I did or do. I wasn't able until this past year to make that emotional divorce from my ex-husband. I was very much like you, but much worse than you. Because of the fact that I always felt, okay, I felt sorry for him, he's gay, but, he needs me, I'm his family. Even though we live in different parts of the country and everything else, I was always there for him.
Right.
And, I thought, what? And people said to me, why do you do this to yourself? Why do you do it? And I said, I used the excuse, but it was true. If he kept reminding me, we've lost both our children. They both passed away, and, we're all we have left of them. So he knew how to keep manipulating me all these years, and he didn't want to let go. Even when I would hang up and say, don't call me again, 6 months later, 4 months later, he would try.
Mm-hmm.
And until he really did something really despicable and horrifying, I had to finally cut the strings altogether. But that was only, 9 months ago after, 30 years. But when I went through a lot of bad times over that, I really was leaning on you mentally because of the fact that you were going through a similar situation of an emotional divorce. So I like to tell that to women that, a lot of times you get a divorce, but it's not really over because you're still emotionally tied into him.
Yeah.
And being the ever
married
that
help. Long. Yeah.
Right? Because that's who we are.
I did feel that he didn't have any siblings. He didn't have any. His parents died a year after, his mother died a year after her divorce. I even went to the funeral, and I helped clean out her house and all that because I felt like part of it was...
We had to keep helping them. We felt sorry for them.
You can't just drop them and because that's my personality, and it's been 23 years, and he didn't have anybody else. There's just all kinds of things. And it took a long time for me to realize that that was not a healthy thing to do. And, like you said, I enjoyed hearing about all his woes because I could, it made me feel big or
important.
Important.
But you're still important in his life, right?
Yeah. And so, that was, and so for me what happened was I found out last summer, and I figured after the arrest he would go in the closet and shut the door and never come out again, and to keep his job and all that, and then I found out last summer he'd been carrying on with somebody for a year and a half. I couldn't believe it.
You were
and
shocked,
so
right?
I was shocked. And
you were more shocked with that than finding out he was gay before, right?
Yeah, because, I can't imagine somebody wanting to stay with him for a year.
Well, that's for sure. My neighbor.
I thought,
for a minute.
There must be something going on. But I told him that he would need to tell a kid this. We're not having any secrets anymore. We're going to be transparent here. And he couldn't even tell the kid, so he wrote him a letter, and, it was just ridiculous about, trying to explain with his rough childhood and all this kind of stuff. And he did mention that, he did realize that he hadn't been the mother, the husband to their mother as he should have been, but... all kinds of excuses. And I said, it'd be nice if you would write me a letter one day. And so he did, and it was just what it didn't say was more powerful than what it did say. I mean, the only place he said he was sorry was that he was sorry it took him so long to write this letter. But, And maybe, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, maybe his attraction to this person, his, you know, emotional attraction and all the whole thing, which was aligned now with who he is, with this man, made him realize, wow, I sure didn't have this with her. He didn't really know what was missing at the time. I'll give him that. But in that, when he had this little guy on the side, that was, for me, it was like, all right, you do not need to be calling me and whining to me anymore. You have this person in your life. I'm done. I'm done. And that, you know, and then shortly thereafter, that guy moved on, quote, moved on. So I don't know what happened there, but...
Well, he probably spent time with him like you did and didn't feel like sticking it out like you did.
Yeah, who knows? But, you know, it is amazing that I'm at the point now where I can just, you know, I can get through the day without even, you know, him not even popping into my mind. I mean, but it's taken a long time, a long time.
Me too, Wendy. Look how long it took me. My God, you're way ahead of my curve.
As far as, you know, the people that are just facing all this right now, you know, I know I sound really confident now, but I was not. I mean, I was a puddle on the floor. I could barely move forward, and I did not know how I was going to get through this, and I didn't know if I was going to come out alive on the other side either. I knew what I would have was going to be better than what I had in my marriage, and as time went on, I realized how toxic it had been. I didn't know it when I was in the middle of it, and it was very scary to live alone. I hadn't done finances in, you know, 23 years. I had to change all the utilities to my name, and there was lots of detail and things that I had no idea what I was doing, but I have to say that life is good for me right now. I have a pretty good paying job now. My house is paid for. I am doing home repairs, but I do want to mention that last summer I did go through some panicky kind of things, and I felt like I was having some kind of post-traumatic stress something or other, 5 years post-divorce. What is this? But didn't think that it really was post-traumatic stress because he really hadn't threatened me with a knife. I hadn't gone to war. I hadn't been raped. There wasn't anything really, really violent that had happened to me. So I really didn't think that I had post-traumatic stress disorder when I read it on the computer, but I felt like I had had it, so I did find a really, really good book, and that talks a lady who worked with 9/11 survivors, and she watched people who were more resilient than others and figured out what they were doing to survive better than others, and she wrote a book, and it really was wonderfully helpful to me. In helping you move forward and not making this whole scenario define me anymore. And I just want to put that out there because it really gave me, it kind of held my hand in saying that, you know, you really don't have, you can get yourself back again. And, you know, lots of people have been through trauma, and it is trauma. But you can survive it and thrive afterwards. And so, I did do a lot of work myself, but I also got a lot of help. And
What is the name of that book, Wendy?
It's called Back to Life. And it's by someone named Alicia, A-L-I-C-I-A, Salzar, S-A-L-Z-E-R, Salzer. She's a psychiatrist out of New York. But I did want to, she describes trauma as any event or situation that fundamentally shakes our understanding of the world and our place in it, which certainly is what happened to us. There are really two different things referring to. There's the traumatic event itself, and then there's the take-home trauma, the way that the trauma changes our views, the rules we live by, and the way we see ourselves. The long-lasting casualties after trauma are the spiritual, emotional, and cognitive hits you've taken and how those changes affect how you subsequently move through the world. Traumatic events pose a challenge to our sense of justice and order. A world that once seemed fair no longer does. You thought that if you were loyal and caring that your marriage would work, but it didn't, and now you feel less able to love and trust. So it's a very comforting book, and her approach is to not go back and revisit the trauma, but to try to regain yourself back, and it's very, very helpful to me. I think you can get it on Kindle for like $1.
Can't be bad. It's a really well-invested dollar, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there may be people, women, that are not there yet. You know, you're not ready to get to this point, but to know that it's out there, and I just want to give hope that you can have it not define you. You know, it'll be a part of you, but not be your whole life, which it probably is for many right now who are in the deer in the headlights right now, and it totally dominates your every move. I was there.
Well, honey,
I really was.
Since you know, on that subject, if you don't mind, we could spend a little time just going over your first list.
Okay.
For women to go through that in the beginning stages, and a lot of people in the beginning are listening to this show. But even if you're health and your journey, you're going to encompass all of this. So when do you have the recovery? If you can, you know, if you haven't received it, if you haven't written to me, then please write to me. And bombk@aol.com. I do send this out to most of you when you write to me for help, so you'll know what you're going to be facing ahead. And so when you... A little bit first about phase one, when this all happened and the nightmare you can't wake from.
Okay. And you know, I didn't sit there and say, I'm going to write down everything that's happening. I didn't write all this down until probably 3 years after I started, you know, processing it all, because I was just, everything was swirling, and there's just so many layers of stuff to get through. So I had to get it organized in my mind. It was just making me crazy. So I did have to write it out in columns is what I did on a piece of paper. And so phase one is what I call shock and awe, the nightmare I can't wake up from. And those are just words. You can't even think in sentences. Shock, betrayal, fear, questioning, no trust, clues missed, clues seen, relief, confusion, fragile, disbelief, shame, lots of shame, anger, despair, lots of despair, weak, blindsided, no dots to connect, secrecy, crisis, foolish, inadequate to cope, embarrassment, deer in the headlights, can't think beyond the feelings, worry, worry, worry in so many directions, overwhelmed, can't breathe, isolation, so alone. And how did this happen? I never met any other women who were going through this face-to-face until 4 years after my divorce. So I think if you can get to a retreat, it really would help a lot. And then that took about 6 months just to get to the adjustment of, wow, this is really happening. Then is when I had to start accepting some things on the surface, like, all right, well, I got to get through a divorce here. And so I'm swimming so that I don't sink, surviving. And that would be having to handle everything, overwhelmed in a new way. Now I'm overwhelmed with things I have to take care of, everything. Making choices alone, dealing with the nitty-gritty of separation and filing for divorce. Dealing with accounts, paying the bills, dealing with housing, breaking the news of the divorce to the kids, dissolving the joint accounts, getting utilities in your name, deciding how to wear your rings, deciding who should and should not know. That was very difficult for me. I just didn't want to lay it in anybody's lap because it was such a source of gossip that they would go to be telling somebody else. And so I kept it to myself because I didn't want it to go spreading everywhere. Deciding how much to tell, attempting to negotiate, peeling away from him, looking at all of your belongings in a new way. I mean, that was very traumatic to have to itemize all that. Forcing yourself to put one foot in front of the other. Weary of it all, and it's just begun. Keeping busy so as not to feel. Establishing new routines. Taking on more part-time work. Facing family and close friends. Finding a new normal. Being careful about keeping the kids protected. Watching what you say about him, but still being resentful about everything. And looking forward with dread. I did make a big point to not bash him in front of the kids. I come from a child development background, and I know that it can be very damaging. It's hard enough for these kids going through divorce. I don't need to be laying that on them, too. Kids are 50% of their DNA is their dad. So I just had to really bite my tongue on that, but I felt it was very important. And it has paid off. I think my kids have a fairly decent relationship with their dad as best they can. I didn't need to add that drama. Okay, so that took me about a year just to get through that. And then the next thing is more things to deal with, wrestling with reality. The mountain is still there to climb. And now things that I didn't have to deal with earlier because it was in crisis mode, now I have to really look at things. Is this all there is? There's pressure to be over it, less family rallying support, weary of stage two and ready to go back to handling less but without him, stuck, no roadmap to follow, uncertainty, which way is forward, anger resurfaces. I do not want this new life. I don't want him to see me dealing. I don't want him to think he's off the hook. Sadness resurfaces. Maybe there'll never be someone, a partner. Wasted time. I have never really been loved. That took a long time to get over. I had never been with anybody but my husband. And so that was very, very big grieving process for me. Fear of the unknown. Questions. Do I tell the kids the whole truth or not? Who should I tell? Should I tell other people? And then what do I do about the house? Do I change careers? What do I do now? It was just a big abyss in front of me. I didn't know what to do next. And you do start forgetting some of the bad stuff, and you wonder if maybe it would be better just to go back and deal with him and not have to face the uncertainty of the future. And it's a very tempting thing to do. Because even if it's something bad, the known is easier sometimes to hang on to than the unknown. But I have read other things where they say just because it's comfortable doesn't mean it's serving you. And you have to keep pushing past that. You're lonely, but you're afraid to get out there, trying to move forward, but it's so hard. Oh, it's so hard. And then I thought that would be the end. I thought I would have four phases and I'd be living happily ever after fourth phase, but I have now found that there's now five phases. Phase four was a new reality, and I call it the wounds have healed, but I'm living with the scars. It's basically accepting and adjusting. I accepting that I am a divorced woman who is married to a gay man. It's very hard to say out loud. You have to get to that.
It's funny you should say that because one of our members, in our support chat, that's exactly what she said. She had to keep saying it over and over. I am married to a gay man. She said every day she said that over and over until it could finally in.
Yeah. Yeah, and when I look back at now, it just looks all simple, but it was not simple at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really at have really overcome that I did not cause this to happen, that this happened to me. That took a long time to overcome that. And I, after meeting, 50 different women now I've met at 3 retreats, I am way past the shame of this happening to me. This happens everywhere. It happens to everybody. And, you know, I'm getting ready to, you know, go on Oprah and talk about it. No, not really. But I'm very comfortable with it now. I was not for a very long time, but I'm very comfortable in saying, yes, this happens, and no, it's not our fault, and let me explain it to you. You know, for a long time, I wasn't there. I have to accept that he will never understand what he put me through, nor will he ever apologize. That's another thing that's been a long time coming for me to accept.
Yeah, and can we talk about that, Wendy? Because so many women feel, well, I can't move on until I get a confession or an apology. But
right.
I tell them, if you're going to wait for it, you're never going to move on because you're not going to get it.
Right.
Even if you get it, they don't understand even what they're apologizing for. They're just doing it to placate you.
Correct.
So they're not going to understand what they put you through, and they don't even feel bad about what they put you through in most cases.
No, because they feel sorry for themselves that they're gay in a homophobic world. That's all they're focused on. And
for that,
they feel sorry
that they gave you their whole life. You know, they sacrificed everything by staying with you in a marriage when they didn't want to be married to start with. And you don't appreciate that. You know, how could you be so ungrateful that they gave up their lives to make you happy?
Yep. And I tell
really
you what
helped
me, Bonnie, reading all that love fraud and narcissism and really reading that over and over and over and realizing, as you have said many times, they don't think straight. They have a totally different belief system. And I kept trying to put my belief system on him.
You were expecting him to act like a straight man when he's a gay man.
Yeah, like in the beginning. If I just ignore him the way he's ignoring me, he's going to go, oh, I don't like being ignored. I'm not going to do that anymore. I thought that would work. And I'm teaching my children, you know, he operates in a whole different ballpark. And and that was reading the narcissism and the love fraud sociopath stuff made me realize that there really are human beings that exist like this. And
by the way, if any women want good articles on narcissism, just write to me. I have a whole bunch of them on narcissism, sociopath. And of course, you know, I have Donna's newsletter every week on love fraud.
And I've had to teach my children to set boundaries with the narcissistic dad and not be manipulated the way, you know, because he's trying it. Believe me, they don't ever change. And they are learning how he operates.
And I think that's important to explain to children, Wendy. You know why? You know, just like you were neglected, your kids were also neglected by a narcissist.
They're also
personalizing it. What did I do wrong? My dad doesn't want to have a relationship with me.
Yes. And it affects daughters differently than sons, I'm seeing. I've really had to really explain that to them. And don't know that they've really processed it the way I have. And, you know, I think that will affect their future relationships, I'm sad to say. But I've done the best I can, you know, in trying to be open and honest. And I can't, you know, they're grown-ups now. So that's going to be what they're going to have to do. Let's see, what else did I have to accept? This is not what I envisioned for my life, but it is what it is. I will be okay. This will not consume me anymore. Boy, it took a long time to be able to say that. I did the right thing, choosing to leave a toxic relationship, even though it meant breaking my vows. I now realize that was the right thing to do. I do have more inner peace and self-sufficiency and less wrenching heartache. I had a lot of heartache. But now I'm able to be alone and not be lonely most of the time. It's not always wonderful, but it's better than it was, than being in a toxic relationship. I've had to adjust. The adjustment is I'm responsible for everything, from tires to taxes to tending the house, making all the decisions. That was a big adjustment. That's part of the trauma, I think. It's just
absolutely all
in my hands now, and I did not feel strong, and I was resentful of that. Still learning to cope with all the being single and stillness, Friday nights, Saturday mornings, people doing things on holiday weekends, and, you're still single, and you're still alone, and you feel like a third wheel with other people, and that's just it is what it is, and I'm having to cope with that. Still have anxiety intertwined with contentment. But I am finding things that I enjoy, what I like, what things I like to do. It's very odd for me to be that way, because I hadn't been that way, but I'm really feeling more whole now. I still wonder if I'm going to be able to trust anybody again. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know if your marriage is going to work? I don't know. Is it worth putting myself out there? And I really can't answer that question at this point. I'm hoping the next phase, and I think I'm getting there, is, I was able to take a trip last summer with a friend, and getting more brave. Takes so much courage to get through this. Oh, my goodness. About really embracing the future instead of fearing the future. I have a lot of fears. A lot of fear drives my decisions. And if I have that, imagine a lot of other women do. You're just so afraid of moving forward. And it's taken a lot of work and a lot of time and a lot of talking with lots of people. The retreats have been wonderful to help you realize how far you've come and help you process things and not feel so alone, and then you have more courage to keep on going. So getting connected with other people, especially in the last few years, has been tremendous. I'm very grateful. Very grateful you came to Houston. And, I've met people now that one lives 15 minutes from my house. I mean, it's been wonderful. I'm very grateful. And I really highly recommend, even though some don't live nearby, I'm now emailing Yasna in Australia, and we really bonded, and we've been emailing back and forth. So there's nobody who gets it like another straight wife. My sister.
Oh, no, it's so empowering when you meet other women who know your feelings. Right?
Yeah, and my family's known me for 56 years, and they still don't quite get it, and they don't quite understand why I'm still talking about it.
I think most people don't get it unless you're living it, unless you're going through it, and I think that's for anything. I mentioned before, our women. I feel terrible for women with breast cancer, and I do anything to, donate to the cause, but I really can't feel what they're feeling because I don't have it, and I can't make that connection, say, I know what you're going through. I don't know what you're going through. I just know it's painful for you, and I can be sympathetic and empathetic, but it's not the same as finding someone who knows exactly how you're feeling. So this is wonderful when you can find support for being a straight wife.
Yeah,
and
you
can
have so much
synergy there.
Yeah,
oh,
you
know,
can
and,
have.
You know, thanks to you taking the bull by the horns there, you've really been able to create a wonderful support network for women.
I'm happy to do it. I'm happy now that I'm on the other side, as was Debbie Pay It Forward, nobody else can help other straight wives like straight wives can. No, even therapists, Who was it, Alexa, that you were talking to last week had not, she was shocked to hear that this was going on.
Right,
so,
Alexa, and she's a wonderful therapist. But
she was wonderful, but it was new to her,
But it's new to her, but she's at least trying to learn. And that's why we do have we do have some other wonderful women therapists part of our groups, you know, who understand because a couple of them have been there.
Yes. I mean, I'm still listening to you every week and learning new things and feeling inspired. So it's a wonderful thing you're doing. You know, I just can't say enough about how if people can just hang on and glean the support from however you can. I know when my kids were living at home, I couldn't listen to a radio show. We only had one computer, and, you know, we didn't. So I would have to listen to it at other times of the day and have to work around my kids and all that. And but I, you know, I hung every 15th of every month for that newsletter to come. And so it's a wonderful thing that you're doing.
Think that after all these years there's still so much to say. But it's amazing that you never run out of things to say because there's so many issues that come up.
Exactly.
You know, one of the sad issues I'll just talk to you about for 1 minute and then we'll go back and finish up. But, you know, I had a man call me this week, a very wonderful man. He's what I call the other man. These are men that go with married gay men who are under the impression they're leaving their wives and they're their new venture into the new world of gay. And, I mean, they're not trying to hurt the wives. They just fall in love with a guy who's looking to be saved out of his marriage to a woman. And promise him the sin of the world, and you're the only one I love. And then, you know, they get screwed every time. These are guys who are players. You know, they'll stay with their wives. They'll tell their wives these guys are crazy. They're lying. And he got caught up into a mess like that. And I told him that, you know, the wife had texted him, leave my husband alone, because he's probably telling the wife that this guy's going after him. And the truth of the matter is they've been having a wonderful love relationship for, you know, a while. But now the guy's saying, push is coming to shove. You keep saying you're leaving. When are you leaving? And, of course, the guy has no intentions of leaving, like I told him. And, you know, he had a meeting with the wife this week, and he showed her. I said to him, look, show her proof. Show him the letters. Make her see it for herself, because she kept saying, well, he said it was an emotional relationship. I said it was no emotional relationship. You know, sometimes women just don't want to believe.
Right.
Even when it's kicking them in the face, right?
Absolutely.
And we do understand because...
I mean, your whole world has totally blown apart.
Exactly. And they have a somewhat good marriage. You know, we had bad marriages. But when you have a good marriage or semi-good, or you think it's good, it's so much harder, isn't it?
Yeah, I would think so because... Well, I remember some of the women at this last retreat, you know. I mean, this is your companion. This is, you know, this is security. This is financial and emotional. And to just blow that up, it seems crazy to do that from anybody standing on the outside. And then you add on top of that the fear, like if you're not working, if you've been a stay-at-home mom, I mean, that's petrifying to imagine. So it's much safer and easier and, you know, less stressful for the time being, at least, to not even go there. You just can't even go there. You're just in such shock. But, you know, my advice would be, you know, maybe you can't leave right then and there, but you've got to get your brain thinking in that direction.
You know, like when you say that your feminine spirit is restored, you know, so many of us have had our feminine spirit destroyed by men who don't treat us like men should be treating us and making us feel that we're the ones responsible for the inadequacies in the bedroom. And to me, there's nothing worse than taking away a woman's sense of who she is in a bedroom and just making her feel inadequate. I mean, how much more cruel can you get, right?
Right. And, you know, Bonnie, when I was going through this and I was kind of a few years out and I was just kind of like, all right, here I've gone through this whole thing. I mean, I've totally, you know, taken over my life and having to do all these adjustments and I'm still alone. I have never been with a straight man. I don't know what I'm missing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to make sense of this in my head going, you know, why did I, you know, should I have stayed or, you know, because I'm really not in that, if you want to look at just that slice of my life, I'm not any better off, if you want to analyze it that way. But it's been a long time to realize that it is, you know, just like with the kids, it is far better to be alone than to wish you were. And to be married to somebody who's not being the person that they should be is far worse than not getting it because I'm single.
Right, exactly. And, you know, a lot of us, I don't know about you, Wendy. I don't know about you, but a lot of us were walking on eggshells, as they say. You know, always worried about saying the wrong word, he's going to get angry. Doing the wrong thing, going to get angry. Not keeping the house clean enough, going to get angry. You know, so we were living our lives not for ourselves, but by keeping a man happy who can never be happy.
Right.
Because he's gay.
Well, maybe he'll want me then. Or maybe he'll, you know, that.
Right, exactly.
Alexa was talking about the bargaining. You know, well, maybe he'll want me if this. And when things settle down, maybe. And so I got constant torture in myself, even though I'm still not sexually active now. Like I was back then, but there's a reason. You know, I don't have a husband that's rejecting me. And I think that emotional rejection is far more toxic than we realize until now I'm on the outside. And you're right, I don't have a man in my life, but I am healed and I'm okay and I'm content. And, you know.
And that's what you say here, how you end it. Is that, you know, looking back with satisfaction, trusting myself, embracing the future rather than fearing it. You know, there comes a point where you stop being afraid, right?
I'm a much more whole person now.
Mm-hmm.
Much more whole. And should anyone come along, my goodness, it will be different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will have self-respect. I will be able to have better intuition. And pay attention to those red flags should they come up. And that was what happened before. There were some red flags where I wasn't getting the attention. It wasn't a gay red flag. It was a red flag of somebody who was caught up in himself. And I should have been strong enough to say, forget you, I deserve better, but I wasn't. And now, strong enough that when that's not happening, I will say goodbye. You know, and had I not gone through this whole process of healing over the past 5 years, I think I might have gotten into another relationship the same, like you said before, you know, where I wasn't being treated properly, but I thought, well, at least I'm getting it in the bedroom. Well, that's not.
That's another kind
of
predator, exactly.
Yeah, that's not a whole, that's not fulfilling. That's not a meaningful life. So,
exactly.
You know, it's a long, long journey. It's a long, twisted, crazy journey, but,
that song that Whitney Houston did really summed it up the best, Wendy, when I didn't understand it exactly when it came out. It's been like 25 years ago. But when she says the greatest love of all is learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so true. I mean, you have to be your own biggest fan. You can't depend on anybody to validate your happiness. You have to be able to validate it.
That was a very foreign concept for me to really understand what that was. I had to unlearn a lot of things that I...
Me too, Wendy. You know, I think that comes with low self-esteem. I think women with low self-esteem don't believe they're worthy of loving themselves because they have low self-esteem to start with.
Right.
So...
Right.
You know, you always say, like, how do I build my self-esteem? You got to find a way to learn to love yourself, or it's never going to get better, right?
And you just have to kind of reclaim yourself and go back. And I will say that book does help you figure out what are your strengths and find yourself again. Because I had really shut it down. I didn't even know that I'd shut it down. And I think that's why some of the women that want to stay, well, it's better if I just stay because they don't even realize what they're, you know, they don't realize how much they've lost of themselves. And you don't really realize that after you're out. So I really understand the desire to stay. I do understand it. But I think it's very fear driven. I think it's really they're just too afraid to really face the whole thing. And I understand that. I'm not trying to say that's a weakness. I'm just trying to say that I did not realize how much more of a whole person I would be now.
Uh-huh. Maybe we can change it. It's not a weakness, it's a beatness. It's when you're beaten down enough that you can't see yourself for who you could be.
So you just
start buying into all those terrible messages about yourself.
Yeah. So,
Wendy, we've exhausted your time because I'm sure you're exhausted. I'm sure you're exhausted by now, and you've been so nice overstaying your time. I really appreciate you giving us the extra time. Unfortunately, I only regret that, you know, you're always so interesting and get so intrigued by everything you're saying. We didn't have time to go over some of your other lists, and I think they're so important, too. So maybe if you don't mind, you know, in a few months you'll come back and,
we'll
go over some of your other lists because we always get...
Sure.
You know, I just love this first recovery map. But, you know, now people heard it, so it's recent. So maybe we can come back in a couple months and do your other list. That'll also be so helpful.
Sure.
Is there any woman who needs help? If you're in the Houston area, write to me at bomk@aol.com so I can hook you up with Wendy and the other wonderful women that are in Houston. Did you know that Grace is in Houston this week?
I've talked to Grace this weekend. Yes, I did. So, yep.
Yep, and Grace will be coming on next month. So I'm really excited about that. Yep, because she's always also a wonderful guest. And to all of our women out there that we've met in person or we're going to meet in person, this is a struggle and this is a battle, but it's one you can win. But the best, most important part, I think Mindy and I, the message that we would like to bring you is that you need support. Having support makes such a difference, doesn't it, Wendy?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it really hastens your recovery and makes you see things more clearly, and you get a whole new perspective, right? You can vent, and everybody, you don't even have to say anything. Everybody knows what you're feeling.
Right.
You can just say, hi, my name is Wendy,
and then
everybody will know what you're feeling.
Right.
Right? And this is the only venue where you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because this is like when you go to a healing weekend, that's the best venue to do it in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
yep.
I want to thank you so much again, Wendy.
Well, you're very welcome, Bonnie. I'm happy to give a hand up to people who are down in the depths because I've been there. My heart goes out to you. I'm sad that we keep having more and more and more, but.
And I'm so glad they have a support network that they can turn to, unlike what we went through when we first found out,
right?
And Wendy, we're all waiting for that book of yours, by the way. The book of Wendy's list.
I didn't think there would be a happy ending, but in the last 6 months I'm coming to realize that maybe there is a happy ending, and maybe I am.
That's exactly right.
So,
all right, sweetie. Well, to all of our listeners, it's been such a pleasure having my favorite Wendy here. Wendy, I just love you for real.
And I appreciate all that you're doing, Bonnie. And my heart goes out to
thank you.
That are out there in the muck. Just keep putting a foot in front of the other. You are worth it. You are worth it. That's all I can say.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Wendy, and to all of our listeners. We'll be back here again with you next week. On the Straight Wise Talk Show. Next week we have a doctor in our house, Dr. Brian Hooper. Isn't he wonderful?
Yes. Wonderful man. Yep.
He is always so comforting to all of us. Mm-hmm. All right, so Wendy, I'll talk to you again soon, and we'll have you back in a couple of months. And thank you so much. Love to you and to all the women. All right, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye-bye.